let's begin. Parshas Vayechi. At the end of Perek Mem Zayin, the Torah tells us, Vayechi Yaakov Beretz Mitzrayim, Sheva Esrei Shana. That Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim for 17 years. Vayehi Me Yaakov Shnei Chayav, the years of Yaakov's life, Sheva Shanim, Varba'a Umi'at Shana. 147 years total. So the Mefarshim asks, why does the Torah need to tell us how long Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim for? Right? The Torah is beginning by telling us how long Yaakov's life was. So how long was it? 147 years. Why does the Torah begin by telling us 17 years in Mitzrayim and 147 total? So look at the Dasikanim, a beautiful Dasikanim, which is also echoed by the Radak. The Dasikanim in source number 2 tells us the following, Vayechi Yaakov Beretz Mitzrayim. Lama hiskir hakasov sach chayav veretz Mitzrayim. Why does the Torah tell us the amount of years that Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim? Lefisha matinu she Yosef haya im aviv kodem mechira so yud zayin shana. How many years did Yosef spend in his father's home? 17 years. The kishem she pirnes Yaakov li Yosef yud zayin shana. Just like Yaakov supported Yosef for the first 17 years of Yosef's life, kach Yosef parnaso v'chal kolo yud zayin shana kinegdan. A beautiful symmetry, right? Just like Yaakov supported Yosef for the first 17 years of Yosef's life, so too Yosef now supports Yaakov for the last 17 years of Yaakov's life.
So it's like a kibbut av.
It's just a beautiful symmetry. Right? The dor holeich v'dor ba, in a sense, right? In the beginning, Yaakov is the one who's sustaining his children, and now at the end of his life, his children are sustaining him, Yosef specifically. The Radak makes a similar comment in source 3, Sheva Esrei. Again, why does the Torah tell us that Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim for 17 years? So says the Radak, Dor Shubo, Kimo Shehaya Yosef, Bechek Yaakov, Sheva Esrei. Just like Yosef was like nurtured by Yaakov and sustained by Yaakov for 17 years, Kein Haya Yaakov, Bechek Yosef, Sheva Esrei Shana. So too, Yaakov was now sustained by Yosef for 17 years. A beautiful symmetry, right? First, Yosef is taken care of by his father, and at the end of his life, Yaakov is taken care of by his son. It's a beautiful idea to just start the parsha with. The Or HaChaim has a different take. In source number 4, the Or HaChaim tells us the following, Vayechi Yaakov Beretz Mitzrayim. Tzarech Ladas, we have to understand, Lama Hutzrach Lomar, Mashachaya Be'eretz Mitzrayim. Why does the Torah need to tell us how long Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim? Ve'od kasha, another question. Lo haya tzarech lomar ela vayhi yimei Yaakov kuf mem zayin. The Torah just needs to tell us how long did Yaakov live? 147 years. Vani yodeya lefi acheshbon kishav asrei shana chaya beretz Mitzrayim. I know already, according to my calculations, that it was 17 years in Mitzrayim. Why? How would I have known that? Lamasha kodem behodah beparshas vayigash. We already know from last week, end of parshas vayigash, dichsiv shenei migurai shloshim shana. When Yaakov stands in front of Paro says, how old are you? And Yaakov says, I'm 130. So he has 130. He dies at 147. 17. So says the Rechaim something very beautiful. In source 4, second paragraph, Ulai, ki letzad shekol yimei Yaakov lo nach v'lo shakat. Yaakov's life was very, very challenging. Ki mishanolad, when he was born, nolad sitno. He was born with his antagonist, his enemy, Esav. Va'adayin lo shaka shimsho, and Esav didn't even go away. Amad lavan ve'ela mosif lorelo. But Yaakov ran away from Yosef, and before that whole saga was over, he's already in the house of Lavan, dealing with all the problems of Lavan. V'acharav hukam al tzara shel Dina. Then he has to deal with the violation of his daughter Dina. V'olo v'yavo roges avedas Yosef. By the time that's over, before he can already turn around, he has to deal with the difficulties surrounding Yosef. So Yaakov has clearly lived a very challenging life. But finally, the last 17 years of his life is peaceful. Chusha Amar HaKasav, and that's what the Torah is looking to highlight. Vayichi Yaakov Beretz Mitzrayim Yod Zayin Shana. Elu Hayu Chayav v'lo kodem. This was the life, not beforehand. Beforehand was such a difficult, so it was so fraught with difficulties that it was hard to say there was true life, true enjoyment. The last 17 years, he was able to truly enjoy. Now the reason I found this to be particularly interesting is if you remember Parshas Vayeshev, we started off with the Kliyakar. Okay? We started off with the Kliyakar. Remember the Kliyakar says, what was the big deal? Yaakov wanted to rest for, right? Vayeshev Yaakov wrote to Tzadikim, Leshev B'Shalva. What was the big deal? Yaakov wanted to relax a little bit. And the Kliyakar so beautifully says that the problem was that once the clock started ticking for the gezerah of Arba'am Yoshana, Yaakov wasn't entitled to have any time off. But now that he's in Mitzrayim, the clock can still tick, and he can have some peace and quiet. So it's a beautiful idea over there, right? So again, Yaakov is able to have some shalva and sheket now, because he's in Mitzrayim, so the clock of Ger Yezarecha can still click, and it can still click and talk, and it will add up towards those 400 years. But Yaakov is also able to have a little peace and tranquility.
And this is what I wanted from somebody else, even though it's the Galut.
Right.
So in the Galut, we always are striving to go back to right. our roots, not to stay in the Galut, but still here he has this kind of reprieve of a little bit.
Right. Yes. So we were just trying to understand, just to review quickly and move on, is when the Torah begins, Parshas Vayechi, it breaks up Yaakov's life. 17 years in Mitzrayim, 147 years total. No problem. And the question is, why does the Torah need to give us the breakdown? We already know from last week's parsha, when Yaakov meets Par for the first time, he says, I'm 130. So if the Torah tells us that, and the Torah tells us that Yaakov was 147 when he passed away, we know he lived 17 years in Mitzrayim. So just to repeat very quickly, the Dasa Kenim and the Radak say something so beautiful. They say that, you know, Yosef was nurtured and by his father for the first 17 years of Yosef's life. And now, at the end of Yaakov's life, Yaakov is nurtured by his son Yosef. So there's a beautiful symmetry there, like Dor Holeich v'Dor Ba, the circle of life. And that's what the Torah is looking to highlight. A really beautiful, beautiful idea. Okay, let's move on to source number 5. We know that Yaakov gets wind of the fact that his life is coming to a close. And he beseeches his son Yosef to make sure that he's not just buried, but buried in Israel. And the Torah tells us in source number 5, Vayikrivu Yimei Yisrael Lamos, that again, Yaakov feels that his life is coming to an end. Vayikra Livno Li Yosef, he calls out to his son Yosef, Vayomer Lo, Imna Matzatzi Chem Beinacha, if I find favor in your eyes, Imna Yadcha Tachas Yerechi, put your hand on my thigh, which was a symbol of taking a Shavua with a Chifetz Shal Mitzvah. We discussed that a number of weeks ago. Vasisa Imadi Chesed Be'emes, you should do kindness for me, do truth for me. I'll not take burin of Mitzrayim. Don't let me be buried in Egypt. V'shachavti mavosai in the sansani of Mitzrayim. I want to be buried. I want to lie with my fathers. Take me up from Mitzrayim. V'kivartani b'kurosam. Let me be buried in that kura, like you were mentioning before. Maras and Machpelah. Be buried with Yitzchak and Abraham and their wives. V'yomer, what does Yosef say? Anochi asa kivarech. Of course, Dad. I will, of course, abide by your wishes. But that doesn't seem to be enough. What does Yaakov say? Vayomer hishavali, swear to me. Vayishavalo, and of course Yosef does swear. Vayishtachu Yisrael arosh hamita. And Yaakov bows down. Why Yaakov feels motivated to bow down at this point, we're not going to discuss. But certainly the pasuk tells us that Yaakov bows down. What I'd like to discuss for a couple of moments is why did Yaakov force Yosef to take a shvuah? Mm-hmm. Yosef atzadik. You don't think that Yosef HaTzadik is going to fulfill his father's wishes? There seems to be a bit of a tug. Yosef says, I'll do it, Dad. And Yaakov says, swear to me. Yosef says, I'll do it. Why doesn't the Torah end there? What prompts Yaakov to demand a Shavua? To demand the oath?
Working with Laban. Knowing that it's not that he doesn't trust Yosef.
Yeah, but this is no Laban, this is Yosef.
But Yosef is not Yosef. Yosef is a Mitzrayim. But maybe the Mitzrayim aren't going to allow it. Mm-hmm. And so maybe a Shavua is holy even amongst the Mitzrayim. And he said, look, Sami.
So Yaakov.
It's not about Yosef, Yaakov, it's about Paro.
It's about Paro. The concern is that what? So to
that
be
maybe
clear.
That Paro won't permit. He'll no, it's your father.
So why would this make a difference?
Because I gave an oath to my father, a dumb man.
Uh-huh. Okay. Can't get out of that.
The oath is holy, even in.
Right.
Maybe,
okay, so we'll see the Ramban is going to reflect those thoughts. Did you want to say something? No? Okay, so let's look at the Ramban in source number 6. The Ramban says, Hishava li vayishava lo. Right? Again, Yaakov says, swear to me that you're going to fulfill my request. And Yosef, of course, tells take the Shua. So says Ramban, Lo haya Yaakov choshed bivno hatzadi ka ahuv lo. Yaakov wasn't concerned, didn't suspect that his precious son Yosef wouldn't abide by the wishes of his dying father. Right? Of course not. Lo haya Yaakov choshe bibno hatzadik ha'ahuv lo sheyimareh al mitzvas aviv, that he would somehow rebel against the wishes of his father. Vala davar asher hafticho, and specifically about something that Yosef gave his word that he would do. V'amar anochi asek v'arech. I mean, if Yosef said, Dad, I'm going to take care of it, then Yaakov was darn sure that Yosef was going to take care of it. So what's the need for the next pasuk that tells us that Yaakov made him swear? Aval Asa came lechazek hayan b'nei Paro. He did so to substantiate, to add meat to Yosef's agreement, willingness to bury his father in the eyes of Paro. Because even Paro appreciates the severity and the weightiness of an oath.
Just call you Ramba.
That's right.
Mama.
Aval asa kein lechazek hayan b'nei Paro. Ulai lo yitin lo rishus lehi pari nimenu. Maybe Paro wouldn't give permission for Yosef to leave. I mean, just consider how important Yosef was to Egyptian society. So it would take a lot of courage for Paro to say, oh yeah, you want to go home? What was the guarantee that Yosef was going to come back? So Yaakov, with a tremendous amount of insight, appreciated that fact, that it wasn't so clear that Paro would grant permission.
Now,
so
he says, swear to me. I think he would want to show kavod to Yosef by allowing him to bury his father in Egypt.
So first of all, the Ramban mentions that Paro could have said, I have no problem with Yaakov being buried in Israel, but you don't have to go, Yosef. Right, Vayomer lo. What could have Paro said? Shalach atachicha ve'atavadacha ve'ole yosham. Send your brothers. You, Yosef, I need you here. But Yaakov, you see, wanted all his sons to participate in the burial. It wouldn't have been sufficient just to have the rest of the brothers take him. That's one issue. Oh, sheyichpots Paro sheyikaver hanavi be'artzo. This is Ramban. Or maybe Paro would have demanded that Yaakov be buried in Egypt, lechavod lahem v'lezichus, as an honor to the Egyptians and as a merit to the Egyptians. Let's remember that when Yaakov came down to Mitzrayim, only 2 years into the famine stopped. Mm-hmm. Why? Everyone appreciated it because Yaakov HaTzadik came down, and that brought tremendous bracha to Mitzrayim. So he was a beloved figure in Egypt.
And I want to say that in Arab countries, the inyan of kavod is a big deal. Jews also that come from Arab. If their kavod is in any way marred, doesn't matter if it's a family member, it will step over you. Kavod is a big deal. So I'm thinking in terms, if it was so back then as well, then if you're not going to allow your father to be buried in Egypt, you're not going to allow us to do that. It's a big deal.
Very interesting. And therefore, says Ramban, V'lachin hishvio. That's why Yaakov demanded that Yosef take a shvua. Because it's not proper for Paro to demand that Yosef violates an oath. Even that far, Paro wouldn't go. V'gam Yosef, and here's an interesting thing that Ramban adds in. V'gam Yosef yitzdarech yoser lihishtadel v'inyan mipnei hashvu. Interesting, what's the Ramban saying over there? You see, as much as Yaakov did trust his son Yosef, and as much as Yosef meant it when he said, Anochi asek kedvarecha, you can't compare someone's motivation and drive to fulfill the father's wishes if he just gave his word versus a shvuah. Yaakov knew that even Yosef, who would of fulfilled his father's wishes. He's going to try even harder to make sure it happens, because he has not only given a word, his word, but has also made taken a shavua. V'chein hayah davar kemo she'amar, and we see this because what does Paro say to Yosef after Yaakov passes away? Paro says, "Ala v'kavoras avicha kasher hishviacha." Paro says, "Go and bury your dad like you swore to him." You see, even Paro talks about the oath. It was a very weighty issue, a very weighty matter, and Paro wouldn't mess. Paro says, "You took a shua, go ahead and bury your father." So that was the need for the shua. Did he trust Yosef? Of course he trusted Yosef. And when Yosef said, "Anochi aseh kedvarecha," "Dad, of course I'll do as you said," that most likely was sufficient. But Yaakov was concerned about Paro, and he also wanted to make sure that Yosef went the extra mile to get the job done.
Sorry, I know I missed the
No, please.
So
yeah.
Were they here for, was Yaakov in Mizraim for 17 years?
Yeah, correct, 17 years. Mm-hmm. So the Malbim has a different take. Malbim is very interesting. It's source number 7. Malbim analyzes this conversation. Because again, at first Yosef says, "Dad, I'll do it. Anochi aseh kedvarecha." The pasuk should have stopped, the Torah should have stopped there. But then there's another, the next pasuk where Yaakov says, "Swear to me." So what's the give and take? So look at the Malbim. Vayomer anochi aseh kedvarecha. Rotze lomar. Tov Yosef, what does Yosef mean when he says, "Anochi aseh kedvarecha"? "Dad, I'll do as you said." What's his thought process going on there? So says Malbim. Rotze lomar. What was Yosef thinking? Or what was Yosef even communicating to his dad? Tov Yosef shelo tishpa'ini. I'd rather not take the shvua. Ve'aseh zo be'atzmi mitzad mitzvas kibud. Dad, I want to do this mitzvah not because I'm being forced into it. I want to do it because I want to honor you. You see, when you force me to take an oath, that whittles away at the schar that I get. Because now I'm only doing it because I made a shvua. I'd rather do it as a way to fulfill the mitzvah of kibud av ve'em. My action will be more wholesome if I'm doing it out of my own drive, not in response to some oath that I took to you. If I take the oath, it's like I'm being forced into it. What's ratzon nafshi? My own desire. If I take the oath, then everyone will see, and it'll go down in history as Yosef did, as his father made him do, as his father made him swear that he would do. But Yosef wants to be remembered by as a guy who did it out of his own will, because he wanted to excel in the mitzvah of kibud av ve'em. So that's what Yosef meant when he said, "Anochi aseh kedvarecha." Dad, I got it. I'll do it. I'll do it. You see, Yosef already understood that Yaakov wanted him to take a shavua. Because already in Pasuk Chavtes, Yaakov says, "Sinna yadcha tachas yirechi." Yosef knew that Yaakov was going towards the Shvuah. But Yosef wanted to stop. He said, "Anochi aseh kedvarecha, Dad, let me do this on my own, because I want to." And that's how this act will be remembered. So what does Yaakov
say? But I think, Rabbanit Maskin said, a very important point. Actually, Yosef missed something here, that his father wanted to save him from a problem with Pharaoh.
So that's very true, and that's the Ramban's approach. But this is the Malbim, it's a bit of a different take.
But this is the point that Yosef
right.
didn't realize that his father actually is thinking even further.
Okay, that's part of it. So the Malbim doesn't necessarily say that. That would have been a fair thing for the Malbim to respond also. But look at the way the Malbim addresses Yaakov's response. And this is the bottom part of the first page. Vayomer hishavali, rotze lomar, lo ashviyacha anochi. I'm not forcing you to take an oath. Kimosha kasav be'eliezer v'ashviyacha. Just like Avraham forced Eliezer. You see, Avraham had to force Eliezer because he really wasn't sure if Eliezer was going to go through with it, because Eliezer wanted his own daughter to marry Yitzchak. So Malbim says, "Lo ashbiyacha anochi." I'm not forcing you to take an oath, just like Eliezer was forced to take an oath. Shebizet tira'ah ka'ones. And that, from that perspective, you're right. Eliezer was forced into it. Rak hishava ba'atzmicha miritzonecha. Take a shvua because you want to. Take a shua because you want to. Show me how passionate you are about this opportunity. I swear I will do it. Not because I'm forcing to take the Shavua, but swear, show me your zeal and how serious and committed you are to performing what I'm asking you to do by swearing to it. Not because you're, don't swear to it because I'm forcing you into it, but when people are really passionate about something, what do sometimes they say? I swear I will take care of it. And that's what Yaakov was looking to see. Show me that passion, that zeal, and that commitment through a Shavua. Again, it's a different perspective. Different perspective. Perhaps it's all two of these perspectives jumbled into one. Maybe the reason Yaakov wanted to see that zeal and that passion is because he knew, well, if Yosef displays that passion on his own, not because he's being prompted to by Yaakov, then Paro won't have anything to say, because Yosef will say, listen, I took a shrua, I was so excited about it, I can't go back on my word. A lot to say. I don't think these are mutually exclusive
right,
perspectives.
So many levels, because exactly. Don't forget what happens after Yaakov dies. The brothers are afraid now that Yosef will take Nakama.
Right.
So it could be a little bit of that too. Maybe Yosef is saying, okay, yes, Yosef drew me very well
right.
In 17 years. How do I know though, after I die, maybe he's still upset with me. Maybe he still thinks that I sent him down.
So there
into
could be many
mess.
Levels.
And one doesn't exclude the other.
But I agree,
right?
I agree. There could have been multiple layers
maybe
going on over there.
He wants to see that zeal, that he really wants to, that he really is forgiven Yosef.
Right. 100%. So now let's move on. I want to share with you two amazing comments. One of my most favorite comments, these two comments are two of my most favorite comments that I've encountered while giving these shurim. So the Torah tells us in the beginning of Perek Mem Ches, Parshas Vayechi begins with like three or four psukim in the end of Perek Mem Zayin, and then it goes immediately to Perek Mem Ches. And the Torah tells us, Vayechi acharei hadrim ha'ila, it was after these things, what's that a reference to? After Yaakov makes Yosef take a shrua, that when the time comes, make sure I go back to Israel, and that's where I'm buried. So Vayomer li Yosef, it's told to Yosef, Yinei avicha chola. Your dad is sick. He takes his two sons with him and he runs to see his dad, obviously before his dad passes away. So there's an amazing medrash. I referenced it last week in passing, but now I'm excited to show it to you inside. Bereishis Rabasi. The medrash, I'll tell you outside a little bit and then we'll read it inside. The medrash wants to understand, why did Yosef have to hear through a third party that his dad is sick? When you have a devoted child to a parent, right? When a parent's ill and a child is really devoted to that parent, that child is on top of the parent's medical condition. Any cough, any hiccup, any anything, the child knows about it. The child's the one taking the parent to the doctor, intimately involved. So Yosef had to be told, your dad is sick. Well, why did Yosef know that? Why wasn't Yosef on top of Yaakov's care?
Because emotionally...
Yeah, good. So I want to show you inside. Yeah. No, you weren't here last week, so you got to say.
Emotionally, a child never wants to face the reality.
Okay, interesting. So Yosef might have been aware, but didn't want to accept the fact. And he has been told by someone, listen, your dad is really dying, you have to face reality. Interesting.
But in his position... Is he being on top? It doesn't necessarily mean that he himself physically is there at every second. Even if you're not, even when you don't have that type of position,
right.
A person's human.
Okay.
So you know you always get that call.
Yeah, but
the person dies.
The
perception.
Yeah, but
the room. They
the perception is from the pasuk that like Yosef wasn't aware of his dad's status, and someone had to go and tell Yosef, oh Yosef, your dad's sick. You should come now. You should come now, Yosef. Why do you know that already? So look at the medrash. Look at the medrash. Source number 9. Hare kol shivcho shel Yosef shehu maflig al kavod aviv. So the Medrash wonders, we praise Yosef for excelling in the mitzvah of kibud avim, certainly in the first 17 years of his life and in the last 17 years of Yaakov's life. Lo nichnas etzlo b'chol shah. He wasn't there with his father at all times. Sheilulei shevo acherim vehodiyu lo sheaviv chola lo haya yodea. That had someone not come and told Yosef, Yosef wouldn't have known. So you see, it's not me, it's the Medrash. Yosef, you didn't know that your dad's sick? You need someone to tell you? Look at these bolder words. Ela lehodia tzidaka. It's telling us the righteousness of Yosef. Shelo ratza lehisyached im aviv. For the entire time that Yaakov was in Mitzrayim, Yosef never had yichud, never had a private moment with his dad. Shelo yomar lo, so never to give Yaakov an opportunity to say to Yosef, Hayich asubach achacha, what happened with your brothers way back when? How do you end up here, Yosef? And what would Yaakov's response be if Yosef really told him the true story? Yaakov would have cursed the brothers. So you want to know why Yosef wasn't aware of his dad's health condition? Because Yosef stayed away from his father. Out of concern that his dad would ask him, Yosef, what happened on that fateful day?
What does that mean? He wasn't with him, just
the two
of them alone.
Yeah, but more broadly, you see that he did not spend all too much time with his father. I understand building off of that word, but this is the Medrash. I don't think I'm reading too much into the Medrash. This is what the Medrash is saying. If he didn't spend too much time, he was never alone with his dad. Because the concern is, dad would ask him, "What's he doing?"
Right,
look, just let me finish the medrash. Okay, Amar Yosef, Yodea ani es Abba. I know my dad. Shekol devarav gezerosin. Anything my dad says comes true. That's the power, the potency of a tzaddik's words. Amar le Lavan, what? Right, he said, Lavan, whoever had those trafim will die. Umesa imi, my mother died. V'imi kalalein. And if my father curses my brothers because I have to share with him the story, Matsasi Mechay Kola Olam, the entire world will be destroyed because of what I did. Shalonivra Ha'olam Ella Bezuchus HaShvatim. Because the whole world was only created in the merit of the entirety of Yaakov's family, all 12 Shvatim. If Yaakov would curse 10 out of the 12 brothers, the whole world would go down the tubes. Lefikach Lo Hayaholich Etzel Aviv Kol Shah. So over there you see the Medrash broadens it, not just by Yichud. Yaakov did not go to visit his father Yosef did not go to visit his father all too often, so that he should never be presented with an opportunity, that Yaakov should never be given an opportunity to candidly ask Yosef what happened. Can you imagine the amount of self-control and restraint that Yosef must have had to display for this to be a reality?
But his father would have been so heartbroken.
So it was a tenuous balance. Obviously Yosef had to spend time with his dad and to care for him in Mitzrayim. But it sounds like Yosef kept a distance.
I think it's ironic that ten tribes got lost anyway.
That's true. It's not the same 10 tribes.
Okay,
that is a bit ironic. But I just find this Medrash to be so inspirational. Now you might not fully agree with its approach, but how far Yosef went to protect the dignity of his brothers is inspiring.
But it's in keeping with his character, because if he could have forgiven his brothers,
okay,
you know, sometimes he loves his father,
right?
Because this, he doesn't want to hurt his father either, because he's still the father, his father and their father.
Okay.
But that he really could have forgiven his brothers,
right?
That's, I think, even a higher level. But so, whatever the case may be, it's in keeping with his character. Having said all that, I'm not saying this is not true, but I'm saying he was a busy man. He was right.
Yeah, okay, so the pshat is that he was number two in Mitzrayim, and he had responsibilities. Right. He couldn't be doting over his father anymore.
It wouldn't be said about him that he took good care of his father for 17 years of being...
Okay, I already saying there are ways to take care of your father without physically being there. But
that would hurt the father.
Okay,
I think also there is another, maybe a very practical thing. They were sitting in Goshen, and this was far away from where he was sitting.
Okay.
This is number one. Number two.
This is a Medrash, but I just find it, I'm not saying this is a shock, but I just find it to be so inspirational.
It's very nice, and there is also in this Medrash something, maybe a hint of what later Yaakov really is, in my opinion, he is not blessing the brothers.
Uh-huh.
No one of them except Ephraim and Manasseh.
Uh-huh. Okay, we'll have to see that a little bit later. Okay.
It could be. This is my opinion. The blessing, we call it blessing, but right. It's not. He's reprimanding them. He's teaching them.
Okay, interesting. So I put this Medrash out there again. I find
it's
it
very nice.
Very beautiful.
Don't miss
No, I understand. Let me share with you
we mothers.
Yeah, I got it.
See, and we have that emotion.
I gotcha.
We women.
Right.
And women, like...
Right.
We can't deal with that.
Right. But seriously, Yosef, spend time with your dad.
I gotcha.
I just even wondered, do you think Yaakov had Ruach HaKadosh keep a note?
It doesn't seem like it, no? Because then the brothers put a ban on everybody that they're on everyone that they're not allowed to share with Yaakov what happened, and they were mishtati v'ribon shalom in that nidoy, in that excommunication. Yeah, so look at the cheskni. This is also, I just love this cheskni. It's just a beautiful insight. The Torah begins Parak Memches with these words, Vahi acharei hadivrim ha'ilah. And it was after these events. So every time the Torah opens up a parak with that phrase, the Mefarshim always look to connect it with what happened previously, right? Because the Torah itself is connecting it, and it was after these events. So what's the connection over here? At the end of Parak Mem Zayin, we learn that Yaakov has a sense that his days are coming to an end. He makes Yosef take the Shvuah, and then we open up with this pasuk that Yosef hears that his dad is not well. So look at what the Cheskuni says. It's quoting a Medrash. Source number 10. Vahi acharei hadivrim ha'ilah. Miyom shenivru shamayim v'aretz. From the day that the world was created, lo haya adam otesh v'chaya mechelyo. What's otesh? To sneeze. From the day the world was created, a person wouldn't sneeze and live past it. Meaning, how would a person's life end? They would sneeze, and that would be it. Ella bechol makom shahaya. Anywhere a person would find himself, o baderech, on a path, o bashuk, or in a marketplace. Vahaya otesh, haya nafsho yotza'ah. The soul would leave. It would depart through the sneeze. And I once gave over this cheskuni, and someone said to me, that makes a lot of sense, Rabbi, because how did the Ribbono Shel Olam infuse life in a person? Such a beautiful idea. Mm. How did Ribbono Shel Olam infuse life? Vayipach be'apav nishmas Elokim. The spirit, the life spirit, enters through the nose, through the nostrils. Vayipach be'apav, God breathes into Adam, exactly, a life through the nose, right, through the nostrils. Mm-hmm. So now, otesh, the person would sneeze and kind of give that soul back out, go back up, right? Beautiful idea. Mm-hmm. So again, the Medrash says, quoted by the Cheskuni, a person would sneeze and that's where they would pass away, wherever they were. Bederech Bashuk, Ad Sheba Yaakov, until Yaakov came around, Ubekesh Rachamim Mazos, and asked for mercy. Amar Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He said in front of God, Ribono Shel Olam, Atikach nafshi mimani ad she'etzaveh el beisi es banai ves b'nei b'nai v'nei etar lo. Don't take my soul from me suddenly. Give me a little bit of warning so that I can get my family matters in order. I can give mussar to my children, and sometimes mussar is best given at the end of a person's life. You can really say things that you can't say otherwise. So Yaakov said, God, give me a heads up. Let me know that my time is really coming to an end. So how does Medrash know that? Because Shene'emar Vayhi Acharei HaDavrim Ha'eleh. It was after these things. What are these things? It was after Yaakov senses that his life is coming to an end. So he calls Yosef, says, Yosef, swear to me, v'chule. And then this parak opens up with Yosef hearing that his dad is not well. So I believe the juxtaposition of the two is the trigger for the Medrash to say, well, it must be that Yaakov knew he was coming to an end, but wanted a little bit more of warning. And he says, Hashem, don't make me sneeze at the end, and I won't have any way of knowing when the final days are coming. I want to have more heads up. So, Shene'emar, v'yacharid v'me'ila. So the Medrash reflects, Shamu kol malchei aretz rigzu. The world heard about this, that Yaakov got ill, and the world shook. This was a monumental change in human nature, in the biology of a human being. Person just sneezed and that was it. And now it changed, because Yaakov said, God, I need a little bit more warning. Let me be ill, so that I know my time is coming to a close, and I can get everything in order. And the Medrash concludes, quoted by the Cheskuni, Lefikach Chayev Adam Bishas Otasho Lahodos LaHakadosh Baruch Hu. Therefore, every time a person sneezes, you have to give thanks to the Ribono Shel Olam Shehavcho Mimaves L'Chayim. That a person, in a way, was saved from death, because that was the original way a person passed, and that changes. But every time you touch that, even momentarily, it's another opportunity to give thanks to Hashem that you're still alive. And that might be why the custom is, think about it. Why do we say God bless you? Gesundheit, be healthy. What, we sneeze, when we hook up, we don't say that. Why is it? Where did that custom come from? So I was just so enamored by this source. Because now we have like a very old tradition to bless Hashem when a person sneezes. Because that was the original way a person passed away.
They never had coals.
Well, they didn't have coals.
What an unbelievable source, right?
He didn't help Abraham.
That could be, I'm not familiar with that. But what an unbelievable source. A beautiful source.
Yes, like Abraham wanted. So he asked, and so he got.
Got
we
it.
We have our wrinkles to thank Abraham.
Got it. I'm not familiar with that. Yes.
Can we, how should I say, in advance,
right.
We have this in Moderni.
Right.
Sheherzata Bilishmati.
Correct.
So this is on.
Not necessarily. I think that's based on a different tradition. That when a person sleeps, they taste like 1/60th of death.
This is also like
this is right. You're saying that maybe an appropriate response to sneezing would be modeh ani lefanecha. Okay, interesting. Shechazarta b'nishmati. Something along those lines. But it's such a beautiful source.
You know what I also get from this is how our perception of tov is so skewed, because when somebody passes away suddenly.
Right.
He said, well, thank God they didn't suffer, you know.
Right, right.
And here Yaakov saying, no, please, Hashem.
Right. Interesting.
Give me time
right.
with my family.
Right. I mean, right.
And so when we see somebody who's ailing in the hospital, we like, oh, this is awful.
Right.
But it's
from a different perspective.
We don't know, Hashem is giving us bracha.
Right, definitely. Interesting way of thinking about it. Very true. Very true. But I just got tickled by the concept that a person used to pass away through sneezing, which was the reverse of how they were imbued with life to begin with. And then the concept of why we say God bless you or Gesundheit is because this was the original way a person used to pass away.
I think there is a midrash, I'm not sure exactly, maybe I'm wrong, but I heard that sneezing is echad mishishim shel mita.
But where does that come from?
Right, so this is what I think that
right.
maybe this is where...
It's the same concept, 100% the same concept. So we know that Yosef gets word. There you go. So we know that Yosef gets word that his dad is not well, and he runs. He takes his two children, Ephraim and Asher, and goes to visit his dad before his dad passes away. And the Torah tells us that Yaakov sees Yosef, and he sees the two boys, and he doesn't recognize the boys. Excuse me. In source number 11, the Torah tells us Vayar Yisrael Espanei Yosef that Yaakov sees. Yosef's children, Vayomer Mi'ili, says, who are they? Vayomer Yosef Elaviv Banahim, Dad, they're my children, Hashem Nasan Elohim Bazeh, that God gave me through this Imnis. Vayomer, so Yaakov says, Kachin Na Elai Vivarachim, let me take them and bless them. So the Mefarshim struggle to understand why Yaakov didn't recognize Ephraim and Manasseh. Yaakov has been living in Mitzrayim for 17 years, as we mentioned a number of times. Ephraim and Manasseh were learning with him. Which one specifically? I forget. I think it was Menashe. Was specifically learning one-on-one, right? It was Mesharis Yaakov. Yaakov was very aware of his grandchildren, knew them very well. So why does Yaakov say, Vayomer Mi'ile? Who are these kids? What do you mean? Just look at Or HaChaim for a moment, source number 13. Vayar Yisrael, Kasha, Vahalo Yudzayim Shana, Hayoshim Lefanav, Lilmo Torah. For 17 years, Ephraim and Manasseh were sitting next to their grandfather learning Torah. So what was he asking? What do you mean? You know these guys. So Radak, going back to source 12, gives us a very practical answer. Vayar, Ra Osamerachok, he saw Ephraim and Manasseh from a distance. He couldn't make them out. He kavdu enough. The man was old. His eyes were not working as well. So they were a little far away. He was a little blurry by that point. His eyes were a bit blurry by that point in life. So he couldn't make it up. He could only see someone when they were very close. Who's with you, Yosef? You know, it could have been that Yosef was standing very close to Yaakov, and the boys were sitting a bit further away, and Yaakov just couldn't make it out. So he said, Mi'ila, who are these guys?
Probably had his.
We're going to actually come to that in a moment. So we're gonna come to that in a moment.
Could this be his tikkun for when he went into?
Interesting.
Yeah,
Yitzchak, and
exactly, and he said, who are you?
Interesting. Maybe. Let me just share with you just two other perspectives.
Okay.
In Rashi in source number 14, Vayar Yisrael es b'nei Yosef, Bikesh Liberchan, Libarchim, he wanted to bless them. V'nistalka Shechina Mimenu. And the divine presence removed itself from Yaakov at that moment, right? Again, so Yaakov wanted to bless Ephraim and Manasseh, but the Shekhinah removed itself from Yaakov at that moment. Why? Lefish us in Yerubam the Achav Latseis me Ephraim, because two evil kings were destined to come out of Ephraim, the Yehu Uvana v'Manasseh, and another king from Manasseh. So because the descendants of these two individuals, Ephraim and Manasseh, were destined to be bad, so the Shekhinah removed itself to not allow for a bracha as easily. Okay, look at the Malbim in source 15. Vayar Yisrael, I just love how practical the Meforshim were. Malbushei ha'ivrim hayu mishunim mimalbushei ha'mitzrim, along the lines of what you were saying, the clothing of the Egyptians were different from the clothing of the Jews. The Yosef shehayah karuv lemalchus, and Yosef who was number two in command, v'chein banav and his children hayu lovshim kimalbushei sari mitzrayim, they were wearing Egyptian clothes. And the Malbim points out that we see precedent that rulers and officers have to act and dress differently, even within the Jewish people. B'kemosha kasov shalbeis Rabbi Gamliel, the home of Rabbi Gamliel, hayu mishane mehal chasam mishum kavod malchus, because they were part of the king, the Davidic dynasty, they acted differently. So Yosef was not just was he engaged in Egyptian society, but he was royalty. So he and his children dressed differently. So Yaakov couldn't recognize them. He said, "Who are these guys?" They're my children. Don't let the clothes, the exterior, throw you off, Dad. They are righteous, God-fearing Jews. So the reason that you're not able to see who they are, to recognize them, because they're wearing different clothing, mipnei, says the Malbim, connects it to the end of the pasuk, asher nasan li Elohim bazeh, shenoldu bazeh hamakom, they were born in Egypt, v'hamakom v'hamatzav mechayiv zos, and the time and the situation required it. So my children, when in Rome, do as the Romans in a way, that we live amongst Egyptian nobility and royalty, and my children have to dress that way. So you're going to tell me, okay, very nice. But then they come this way for 17 years. So what changed right now? So this is my thought, and I believe this as an open-ended question because we have to conclude. But maybe for all 17 years, when they weren't rushing to go to see Yosef, they changed. Mm-hmm. Means the extent that when they were in the palace, they had to dress like Egyptians. When they were in Goshen with Bnei Israel, they had to dress like Bnei Israel. But now Yosef gets word, he doesn't even think about changing his clothes. He just runs to get to see his dad. And the children are being, and also they don't get to change their clothing. So then Yosef is thrown off. Yaakov is thrown off. He's able to recognize Yosef because it's his son. Maybe Yosef is sitting close. But maybe the vision combined with the fact they weren't really wearing their normal clothing just threw Yaakov off.
Or rather.
Yeah.
When they go into Mitzrayim, one of the things they do is they wear the clothes of Jews because that's the way they retain their identity.
Okay, right.
Maybe this is a warning from Yaakov. Who are you?
Interesting. Beautiful. I love that. It's a beautiful idea. It was almost accusatory.
Like,
who are you?
Who are you? Be aware of who you are. Don't assimilate.
Beautiful.
Don't become
idea.
Like them.
Okay.
Don't dress like them.
Beautiful
Don't
idea.
Like them.
Okay.
Focusing on a simple level, just... He stood out. He didn't. Yosef didn't have to be standing closer. Yosef must have worn some sort of like a crown or whatever.
Right.
So it was very obvious, even from a distance. Even if your eyes are dim,
right?
You don't have to see the facial.
Interesting. Okay. It could be.
You know,
it could be.
You could just see from the crown, and
right.
I don't know what the boys were wearing, because if Menashe was there the whole time, something doesn't make sense. What he was wearing, but I just think Yosef was easy to identify even from a distance.
Okay, that could be. Definitely could be. All right, I don't want to take up Rabbi's time.